Hey, gang. Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here, enjoying a nice, cool dad's root beer. Dad's old-fashioned root beer. You know why? You know what? Oh, and I'm here with Tom Kaczynski. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, but I'd be doing better if I had one of those root beers, man.
Yeah, you know what I like about Dad's old-fashioned root beer?
What's that?
Other than the taste, the great taste. It's not kosher. You know how I know
you just got to wash the hot dogs you have with it, you know?
Yeah. No, it's not kosher. And I know it's not kosher because I've got my Kosher-tified app up. Kosher-tified. It's the app that lets you know what's not kosher. And it's listed here, Dad's old-fashioned root beer. It is the official root beer of National Bugle Radio. Well, that was fun. It is fun. Go to kosher-tified.com, or you can go to National Bugle. Oh, approved by Mr. T, my engineer. Go to nationalbugle.com, and click on the Kosher-tified link and download the app. It's I think it's $2.98. It's available exclusively for Android phones. So, well, Tom, you were just on the David Duke Show today. How was that?
I was. It was a great honor to speak with Dr. Duke, and I thought we had a really good conversation talking about some of the challenges and opportunities that we face as a people, and making sure the sad case of Andrew Dodson doesn't recur.
Right, the sad case of Andrew Dodson, who was a young academic, attended the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally, was photographed there, and these journalists, so-called journalists, using his photograph, somehow managed to link it to his identity and then started harassing him and making his life a living hell. If you're in academia and people around you know that you attended Charlottesville, your brainwashed students, your professional colleagues, it can make life very difficult. And life got so difficult for him that he wound up committing suicide, which is a great tragedy.
No, it really is, and it's so sad that, you know, people can put out the worst ideas and the most radical things on the other side that are full of hate and there's no consequence, but someone just goes to exercise their First Amendment right to assemble and to just be seen in support of their people, and they're not even just bullied, but they're basically economically castrated. And you know, it's really a sad commentary on the state of academia today, you know, where they say they support free speech. And, you know, at least that's what they always used to be, maybe not so much these days. But that they won't, you know, defend anyone in any of their institutions who dares to express any ideological diversity.
Indeed. And there's a marked contrast between the way this young man is being handled. And do you recall Sandra Bland? She was a black motorist. She had been driving with expired license plates and was pulled over by a very polite policeman. And, of course, he was informing her that she was her license plates were expired and, you know, other minor violations. And rather than simply accepting that she had done something wrong and might need to be written up a ticket or something, she got very rude and resisted all of his very reasonable requests, you know, for insurance and for stepping out of the car and whatnot. She wouldn't step out of the car when asked, and wound up being arrested. And then when she was in jail, she again, wasn't cooperating, wound up hanging herself in jail, and she became a cause célèbre. She is one of she's part of the pantheon of Black Lives Matter martyrs. And so her name, maybe not quite as well known as some of these others, like the guy from Ferguson, whatever his name was. It slips on my mind right now. Michael Brown. She's not quite on the level of St. Michael Brown, but she's up there in the pantheon. And of course, she had been, you know, it might have started with something very small, traffic violation, but here she is, a martyr. There was no legal violation. There was no resisting police orders. Everybody at Charlottesville was following police orders, and look what happens. So there is a massive double standard, and you know, you can be doing nothing wrong, and yet you're confronted with this. And in his case, very tragically, he made one wrong decision. That was to end his life. But in so many other people's cases, including your own, you are hounded out of your job and confronted with having to reinvent your career. So how has that been for you, Tom?
Well, I have to say, thanks to your listeners and a number of other people, the book is doing very well. You know, I have the book, Someone Has to Say It, The Hidden History of How America Was Lost Out. And, of course, it's a little bit of a struggle, but I have taken on the challenge of inventing myself as a brand and a spokesperson for our people, for sanity, for Western civilization, and all those good things. So we'll see. It's an evolving thing, but I think there's a lot of growth in this. You know, if you look at it, we're talking about, it'd be probably about 100 million people, or at least close to that, of people whose interests are not being spoken for in any meaningful way. And when you look at these hypocrisies of how someone like Bland is compared against Dodson, it's kind of like white people are living under Roman law of guilt till proven innocent, but everyone else is living under, you know, English common law, where they're innocent till proven guilty. And I think there's a lot of energy to change that, don't you?
Yeah, it is a very good point. Charlottesville, the way people were treated at Charlottesville is such an illustration of what you just said, because everybody at Charlottesville, all the people who came to participate in the, you know, the legally permitted rally, they were all cast as white supremacists or white supremacists, and you know, white supremacists are just necessarily evil. And the governor of the state, Terry McAuliffe, a Clinton ally, Clinton's Democratic National Committee chairman for many years, he said that those people had no right in the state. They had no, they were not welcome in the state. And of course, many of them were from Virginia. And meanwhile, anybody who protested against them, whether they were throwing feces or had a flamethrower or violently striking and attacking rally participants like DeAndre Harris, who clubbed a 60-something-year-old man with one of these mag lights that was, according to his own testimony, was provided to him by Antifa, he's, you know, you can't question them. They were all described as those who would oppose white supremacy, and therefore their motives were pure. And none of them went to jail. And DeAndre Harris was rewarded for his troubles smashing an older white man upside the head with a mag light. He was rewarded with $160,000, which through a GoFundMe page, which he used to purchase a brand new Mercedes and use it as a prop for his rap video. Is that a good example of what you're talking about? That's what sounds
like.
You
know, I tell you what, Patrick, it's the best example of what America is today. It's upside down. It's where vice is rewarded and virtue is punished. And, you know, as much as I want to blame someone like DeAndre Harris, you know, let's look at the legal system which facilitated this. You know, I'm pretty good friends with Jason Kessler, who organized that, or at least tried to. And the police had promised protection. They had promised to keep the crowd separated. And for all the talk about unlawful assemblies you hear about, what else would you describe the Antifa mob through which people had to basically run the gauntlet down there in Charlottesville? And it's a miracle more people didn't get hurt, and more terribly than they did, because the right to assemble and gather was threatened, and these people, you know, who were out there speaking for the protection of American history, for protecting, if I remember right, a statue of Stonewall Jackson, for Robert E. Lee, were out there protecting one of the great men of American history, and a figure without whom we could not understand where we are today, were out there, basically were paid to be a lynch mob. And no one ever looks into who pays for these people. No one ever looks into why they turn out, or why the government looks the other way, or that the Constitution is ignored now in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And unfortunately, that's what happens whenever you have Democrats. You have their moderates enabling their communists, whereas on the right, you have our moderates enabling their communists and saying we are evil people. Yeah. So it's not a very good deal, you know?
How many people in Congress stood up and said, hey, wait a minute, rally participants at Charlottesville were evil, and not all of the Black Lives Matter and Antifa mob were good? How many people in Congress?
You know, the only person I remember of national prominence who took a balanced position was President Trump.
Yeah.
And I give him incredible credit for that, and that's why he beat 16 milquetoast Republicans to become president, because people want people who will stand up for fairness. I mean, I don't presume that, you know, most people knew which side stood for what, given the media's coverage of it. But if you were watching and you see one group peacefully marching who went through months of effort to get the permits, and you see another one form a mob around them, and you're told the mob are the good guys, I think the cognitive dissonance that put out there was absolutely tremendous. And I think that's why they continue to push the great big lie about the poor woman who died from a heart attack being killed. I think it's absolutely atrocious. It's disgusting, but it's a sign of how far the media will go to protect their narrative, something I've seen in my own life and something which you've reported on in many instances.
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want to leave the discussion of Charlottesville without mentioning the contrast of, the treatment of Jacob Goodwin. So Jacob Goodwin is facing perhaps 10 years in jail or more, perhaps even 20 years in jail. He hasn't been sentenced yet, but he's been found guilty of malicious wounding of that very DeAndre Harris, who had just moments earlier, in the same video clips, attacked the older rally participant with a police-style maglite club. And Jacob Goodwin and I believe two or three others are still in jail. Two of them have been found guilty of malicious wounding. I'm not sure what has happened to the other defendants. And so it's really even more extreme than what you said, because it's not just that they were presumed guilty until found innocent. It's really they are presumed guilty despite of being proven innocent.
And, you know, the worst thing about it is it's victory through lawfare, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't have a fair trial. You don't have a fair jury. You're walking in, if you're Goodwin, into this situation where, you know, evidence is presented in such a way where you basically are there to serve as a symbol. And I think even if you wanted to fight, the other thing that the left does so well, controlling in many ways the system, is they force us to devote what limited resources we have into trying to defend our people from these unending suits. I mean, there's a huge civil suit out there to be made against what Charlottesville Police Department did. I've spoken to some of the people who were involved as potential plaintiffs in it, but they can't afford it. And so it's the old saw, he who has the money makes the rules, and that's why we kind of keep coming back to this question of who's really running things. And when you look at who has the money, you know, you've made pretty clear where the conclusions are, and I'm not going to argue with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know where the money is. During the Stormfront show earlier this morning, we had a caller call up, and he mentioned George Soros, and, you know, other people were talking, and so sometimes I'll, during the times I'm not talking, I'll do a little bit of research, and I went to opensecrets.org, and I just looked up opensecrets.org. Is a database, and it uses all of the information that's publicly available from the Federal Election Commission. When people run for office, they have to file papers periodically every quarter with the Federal Election Commission, and they have to name their large donors, anybody who donates more than, nowadays I think it's $500. And so I just looked up George Soros, and in terms of money to candidates, this does not include the soft money to super PACs, which of course is where most of the money goes. This is money directly to candidates or to parties or to conventional PACs. And I looked up George Soros, and they had about 583 listings for him, donations, almost exclusively to Democrats. I did manage to find about two Republicans who had received money from him. But $40 million in these donations. And, of course, like I say, it doesn't include money to super PACs, and it doesn't include the money that goes to Antifa. But, you know, there are these people, and George Soros is the most well-known among them, but hardly the only.
Let me ask you a question, because you're a pretty learned guy. Do you ever feel like Soros serves as a heat shield to distract from something much larger? And yeah. I'm not absolving him of what he does, but it's sort of like he's the public face, your literal Emmanuel Goldstein, mm-hmm. that Big Brother feeds you, while the rest of it's just going on right under the radar, and we obsess over this one figure, not seeing that it's so much larger.
Yeah, and so it is much larger. And 2 years ago, during the election campaign for president, Dr. Duke often brought up the example of Hillary's seven largest donors, each of whom had donated, when we started talking about it back in January or February, we were talking about, okay, who are the donors of $1 million or more to the Hillary super PACs? And there were seven. They were all Jewish. You had Soros. You had the movie guy, what's his name, Steven Spielberg. And perhaps Steven Spielberg's wife. You had, the guy who owns Univision. He's a Egyptian-born Jew who's got dual citizenship with Israel. Names slip my mind, but also
it's not Slim, is it? He's the other.
Yeah,
one,
Haim Sabin. Haim Sabin is
Sabin. Oh, Sabin. That's right. I remember him.
And you know, you had this list, and of course Soros, he's talked about a lot, so he's the one that's easiest to remember, and he's in many ways the easiest example to use because he's got such a well known name. Haim Sabin, most people probably wouldn't know who you're talking about. But you're absolutely right. And you had somebody like Glenn Beck, who, while he was at Fox News, was making, I guess, a name for himself by attacking George Soros, but in such a way, really, as talking about this after.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back to National Food Week, sponsored by CoSertified, the app, and the home of Dad's old-fashioned root beer. And today I'm here talking to Tom Kaczynski, and we're talking about George Soros, who, of course, he is a shady character, a very malevolent character, but also kind of a convenient foil, maybe a little bit too convenient, and it helps us take our... or it leads us to take our eye off the real ball. Is that what you think?
Well, I think that he deserves his blame, but I think there are many other people who deserve equal, I should say, opprobrium that are out there. And I think it's just, I think everyone likes the idea of having a single individual to focus on because it allows people, I mean, making fun of Soros is safe, right? You could be the most anodyne moderate Republican and rage against George Soros. And if George Soros were to take a heart attack tomorrow, would all the problems of the world disappear? Or, you know, maybe they make his son out to be the evil scion. But I just don't see it that way. And I know you don't either. And you know, we talk about the various cast of characters. But I think that sometimes when people obsess over him, you know, and he's done enough bad things to deserve, you know, his infamy. But I just think sometimes it takes away from the understanding that there are institutional, cultural, and quite frankly, ethnic pressures that are driving this agenda.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I've been wanting to ask you about a little bit is Governor LePage in Maine, because you're from Maine, and I understand you were actually scheduled to be meeting with Governor LePage, but that meeting got canceled because you were busy getting fired over being pro-white, right?
It's a hilarious thing. The day before I was getting fired, I had a meeting scheduled with the governor to talk about an issue up here related to saving rural health care. And in fact, something we were working on up here was the idea that instead of giving money to cultural organizations for, say, Somali placement, that we would use that money for health care coverage for rural places in Maine. And there was quite a bit of support for that, which I kind of wonder now that I think about it, if that wasn't another reason why they targeted me, because maybe someone down in Augusta got wind of what I was doing and they didn't want to see money given to the people who had lived here their whole life, but instead would have wanted it to go to, you know, the people who were transplants to kind of continue shifting Maine blue. Because Maine has been trending red. I think Trump only lost it by 2 points.
And did win your congressional district and got one electoral vote for it, because Maine is one of the two states that can split its electoral votes.
That's absolutely right, and he won it by a pretty good and growing margin. Unfortunately, Maine politics, like a lot of states, is one big city trying to dominate and make the rest of the state difficult to run. And in that case, up here, it's Portland on the sea coast, and the rest of the state has to deal with it. But no, Governor LePage has been tough, but I think he's very aware of the cultural dynamics of Maine. He's a skilled enough politician, I think, to avoid getting himself into too much trouble. Although you may recall, he got into quite a bit of trouble in 2016 talking about people who came up from inner city areas and got girls pregnant and then left who had some very diverse sounding names. But
yes. May I read the quote?
Please.
Okay, because I was when you were on Dr. Duke's show today, I was actually trying to feed this quote to Dr. Duke to read. Let's get that up here.
Think it was P. Diddy or something, if I remember right, was the name. But
D. Money, yeah. So
yeah, D. Money.
At January 6th, 2016, a town hall meeting in Bridgeton, Governor Paul LePage said that drug dealers, quote, are guys with the name D. Money, Smoothie, Shifty, these types of guys. They come from Connecticut or New York. They come up here. They sell their heroin. They go back home. Incidentally, half the time they impregnate a young white girl before they leave, which is a real sad thing because then we have another issue we have to deal with down the road. Well, so he was lambasted in the press for that. But where's the lie?
Well, you know, he survived it, and I give him credit for that in terms of speaking out honestly. You know, it's a funny thing living up here in Maine, and I would say this in northern New England generally. People say things, but there's an expectation you don't say certain things publicly. And I think the offense against tact is often considered a worse thing than saying the truth. But the problem is it's unequally enforced, right? It's the same thing we see in other places, where if you go around and you say we want to integrate Muslims who are wonderful, shining examples of people, you know, that's fine. And, I mean, I always think in the back of my mind the week I got fired how a Muslim officer who beat someone up in a club was basically treated totally the opposite.
That's right. Okay, well, we will be back with more from Tom Skaczynski after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech. Quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back to the show. Back at National Bugle Radio. National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery. You know, I don't always drink root beer, but when I do, I drink Dad's old-fashioned root beer. Or Frost-Top root beer. It's not kosher either. So, Tom, getting back to Governor LePage. Governor LePage was born, I believe, in Lewiston, Maine. And Lewiston is distinguished for one particular ethnic group that it has a fair amount of. What's behind all that? Why Lewiston, Maine?
You know, it's a funny thing. It seems
about
like
Somalis, right? A bunch.
Yeah, there were Somalis, and you and I were talking and identifying particularly these were Bantu people who were brought up here. They were brought from a tropical, subtropical, humid environment to a subarctic environment in Maine because the government obviously thought that's where they would best fit in. Or maybe not. Maybe what they really thought is that that's a way to change a culture and a population to a different way of voting, but to say that would be conspiracy theory.
Yeah, it's odd that you'd have so many plants transplanted in Maine, and apparently a lot are being transplanted or were transplanted into Greater Minneapolis and Minnesota. I hear
there were people also in Western Washington heavily placed from people who live near there, in Eastern Washington. I apologize. Mm-hmm. Right on the border with Idaho. And it's just a funny thing where you have these masses of sort of culturally conservative white populations, how you know, where you don't have small agriculture, right? Because that's like the big thing that drives immigrants, you know, to work or migrant labor. You see the government sort of intentionally puts in these refugee camps. Camps isn't the right word, but they put these resettlement efforts in these areas that otherwise would not attract these people.
Yeah. Well, and a lot were placed in or wound up being in Columbus, Ohio, which has something to do, I guess, with Andrew Anglin's personal awakening, being that he's from there. But it, I think it was a pretty open secret, and maybe not even secret, that under the Obama administration, they were purposely targeting areas that weren't diverse enough, that they were too white. You know, North Dakota or Wyoming. Wyoming, they placed Iraqi refugees in Wyoming, but purposely going, ascending, trying to basically disrupt the ethnic homogeneity of the remaining predominantly white areas, or, you know, almost exclusively white areas, because there's something evil about having a lot of white people live together.
It really seems like they feel that way. It's kind of weird that, you know, we're told we live in a colorblind society, but that, you know, you can see so clearly that whites are being, you know, targeted to go ahead and mix them in or move them out. Because even when you look at things globally, it's always immigration into the white countries. You know, even though Saudi Arabia and those countries in the Gulf are extremely wealthy, they don't take Muslim immigrants or Muslim refugees from places like Somalia or Syria. They always come here. And so you got to kind of ask why it is that we are being forced to import these people. And you know, it's not race either. It's got to be deeper than that, because, you know, these people who come in at the bottom of the society compete in many ways with minorities who have been here, you know, whether they're descendants of West African slaves or maybe a second, third generation Hispanic, and they're still being pushed in there. And it just seems to me it's all part of that wider divide and conquer agenda. And it seems like to this point our strategy civilizationally has been, let's run to somewhere they're not. And every time we run, they just get put right on top of us, because no one's willing to stand up and say, hey, it's our government doing this to this. Whose interest are they serving and why?
Mm-hmm. So now in Maine, this is a question. So you've got Boston, and of course the Boston schools were famously were integrated.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
There's a lot of background noise.
I apologize.
Okay. A lot of forced integration in the 1970s, very, very well publicized across the country. And you would have had, I'm sure, a good deal of white flight into the suburbs. The suburbs of Boston certainly reach into New Hampshire. I don't know if somewhere like Bangor, Maine?
No, Bangor's way north, but there are many people who live in the southeast corner of Maine who commute into Massachusetts. That's true.
Portland. I was thinking of Portland. Is Portland close enough to commute?
It would be about a 90-minute drive, but you could, theoretically, on a train or something.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in California, you've had the white flight way up north, you know, into Oregon, but also northern California. Are you in northern parts of Maine, like where you are? Are you experiencing this type of white flight influx, like they are in, you know, places like eastern Tennessee, for instance, where people?
Yeah, that's a good question. I see. Now, mind you, you see what you want to see, but. Take Aroostook County, which, if you can picture a map of the United States in your head, is the very tip of Maine in the far north. Mm-hmm. There are a number of families moving here from different places in the mid-Atlantic, you know, who doesn't look like they're doing much economically, but they're buying up the land and they're homesteading and they're trying to live a much simpler, cleaner life in a lot of ways. And the old joke up in New England has been, if you're north of I-90, that's where New England begins. So if you ever look at a map, there are lots of small towns and hamlets where, you know, traditional America tries to survive. And in many ways it does, because this area didn't really get decimated by the sort of Walmart binge of strip malls that took out a lot of other places. Although now we are competing against Amazon, and we're competing against government structures in all of these states, where really actually a lot of it's people migrating out of Massachusetts who are liberals, who put liberal ideas of population placement. And what they do is they gentrify the cities, and kick the minorities out of the nice neighborhoods, and then they bring refugees in and put them in rural areas. And it's one of the things we really struggle with, because they leave Massachusetts because they don't like what happened, and then they bring the problems that made them have to leave Massachusetts to places like New Hampshire and Maine.
Mm-hmm. And next to New Hampshire, you've got Vermont, and Vermont has been a recipient of a very different kind of what you might call white flight or white flight. And I think of it seems to me, and I'm an outsider, but Maine politics has been to a large extent dominated by New York Jews, people who were born in New York and or have connections in New York, people like Bernie Sanders. What was the governor's name? There was, of course, Howard Dean, who's not Jewish himself, but his wife is Jewish. And Howard Dean went to Yeshiva Medical School. He went to Yeshiva University Medical School and was a classmate of, I believe, named Barack Goldman, who killed dozens of Palestinians, by going into one of their mosques in the West Bank. And what's her name? She later became, I think, ambassador to Switzerland, but she was Governor Madeleine Kuplan or something like that. And they have there's a very different vibe in Vermont, isn't it?
Well, Vermont, yeah, Vermont is weird. I mean, if you go there, every T-shirt says "Keep Vermont Weird." You have a combination of hippies who kind of lived off the land that came there in the 60s. You have this conservative group that's there that no one knows about. I mean, Vermont, until recently, had some of the best gun laws in the nation in terms of open carry. And that changed because a Republican got in there and cucked after Parkland, which was sort of predictable because that's, the sort of Republican they can get elected in Vermont. But that Vermont has a Republican governor would probably surprise people who weren't aware. It works. Vermont works in a lot of ways because of the fact that it's so ethnically homogeneous. I've spent a lot of time in Burlington, their big city. Really, it's overwhelmingly white, a few East Asians and a couple other people. But they tried to start changing that. Rutland, which is one of the third or fourth biggest town there, kind of a post-industrial, used to be sort of a mill town. They wanted to bring a bunch of people in, and the mayor had this big program. Even though they had unemployment over 10%, they were going to guarantee jobs to all these refugees. And the people rose up and voted them out of office. So there's some hope there too. I mean, people do act in their own interest, but Vermont works in a lot of ways. And I guess you can understand Bernie Sanders, where if you go to Vermont and you see the type of people who are there, you can understand why an almost Scandinavian socialism would work there, because you don't have the sort of graft and resentment that sort of comes from the racial components of how welfare states are distributed. But you're absolutely right that there is a lot of Jewish money from New York that goes into Vermont, and they make it a nice little place for them to get away to. I mean, Vermont at this point is very liberal. New Hampshire is very libertarian. And Maine, once you get up north of, let's say, Augusta, is actually surprisingly conservative. It's not a weird thing to see a town like mine, which has 9 churches, and people literally fly the stars and bars in some places.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to get too parochial, but Maine at least used to have a large Green Party. I saw that in some congressional elections, maybe in the last decade, the Green Party candidate was coming in second place. Do you know anything about that?
I know that Maine has a habit of voting for independent and third-party voters. We have an independent senator, Angus King. Mm-hmm. I mean, functionally, he's a Democrat, but he has run as an independent. And he has Republicans who work for him. It's a weird thing. Mainers actually think and believe there is a Maine way of doing things where, the Democrats and the Republicans get along pretty well together, because there's not the sort of discord. They tend to be much more moderate. Independence, there's not a lot of ballot access, if I remember right. There's not a lot of ballot access issues. I believe you can pay your way onto the ballot for a relatively low price. And so a lot of people are encouraged to run, and people in Maine are independent-minded about things.
Okay. Well, I want to shift gears very suddenly and drastically. And earlier this morning, word came out that President Trump has canceled his meeting with North Korean. I always try to get this right.
Kim Jong-un.
Revered Supreme Commander. That's his title. Revered Supreme Commander Kim Jong-un. And, of course, this comes... President Trump says he had been looking forward to the meeting, but you know it can't take place because of the very hostile rhetoric from North Korea. But of course, that comes at the prompting of John Bolton saying they're looking for a Libyan model of drastic and rapid disarmament by North Korea, which of course didn't end well for anybody. I mean, it didn't end well for Muammar Gaddafi, who was anally impaled with a dagger while American planes were providing air support. But it hasn't ended well for the Libyan people who once had the higher standard of living in Africa. Now they're in a failed state and are basically just a superhighway for human smugglers bringing Africans, sub-Saharan Africans, into Europe.
Absolutely. You had to open up the thing for those the nonprofits to run those boats, you know?
That's right. And you know, the
NGOs, that's what they're called.
The Trump presidency has been in so many ways a disappointment. Maybe the expectations were unrealistic. And I do think he basically means well, even if he's an opportunist, but
well, you know, the thing is, John Bolton was an avowed neocon going way back, and a lot of people understood that problem. Now, I will say this. I think bringing in Bolton was a mistake, but I also think North Korea not having the insight to manage this in a way where they got to the table was also a mistake. I mean, I hate to say it, but it does often seem like Trump listens to the last voice in the room with the decisions he makes, and that sort of sclerotic foreign policy really runs, I think, counter to the sort of, how should I say, managed stage diplomacy that's common around the world, but especially so in Asia.
Yeah. It's just very distressing when, although Trump ran primarily on immigration, that was probably his biggest issue. Trade was a big issue, and certainly foreign relations were a big issue. And as far as foreign relations went, it was improved relations with Russia. And of course, why should we get into World War III over Syria? You know, very common sense things. And he hasn't been able to pursue any of that. His presidency is, I mean, I blame a lot of it on this whole Russia hoax and also on the intransigence of people in the Democratic Party or on the non-democratic left rejecting him and becoming the resistance rather than saying, OK, well, at least we can cooperate with him on this, even if we don't like him on that.
I think the thing I'd add to that is I really blame him for a lack of institutional support in terms of who he put around him. Mm-hmm. Like, if we talk about the issues with this ongoing, you know, Mueller thing, that goes back to Jeff Sessions' decision to recuse himself. Mm-hmm. And I've been singularly unimpressed by what the DOJ's been doing. I mean, it's good that they're getting MS-13 out, I guess, but... You know, Trump was elected with a mandate and a direction from the American people to clean house. And instead, he's been playing around. And you know, this isn't something where you can take time and do things that easy. He needed to be, in my opinion, much more forceful. And absent some sort of great denouement that I don't think is coming, you know, it's kind of been a wasted opportunity where he's cared a little too much about being liked and not nearly enough about being effective.
Yeah, well, we'll see. There's 32 months left in his term, and things could change a lot, and especially if the Mueller probe seems to be kind of blowing up or imploding, and that may provide all sorts of opportunities, and I think a lot depends on what people like us do, and are we able to provide a a narrative, information and a narrative and an analysis that is going to be appealing to enough people. And, you know, there's been a lot of progress, and there's been a lot of progress on what you might call, you know, the rude wing of the alt-right, which has built up a, you know, like, for instance, with the Daily Stormer, I really admire Andrew Anglin as a newsman. He's put together a website and mostly through his own probably 80-hour work week, because he's just updating it constantly. Mm-hmm. That's been huge, but there's a need for another more powerful narrative. We'll be back after.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have? Do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Welcome back to the show, National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery, sponsored by CoSertified, the app. Go to nationalbugle.com and check it out. And I'm here with Tom Kaczynski. And Tom, just before the break, I was bringing up the example of the Daily Stormer, which is a good source for news. And it's attracted a lot of, a big following, especially among young people. And young people who have been, who have grown up in an atmosphere of very rude language, so to speak. One thing that I think is very important about your book is it's very normie friendly. It's got very compelling narratives, but it's something that you could show your Aunt Betsy, right?
Well, absolutely, and I thought that was really important. You know, it's designed for someone who knows nothing other than what they see on media every day. You know, the same basic information that if you watch Fox News and listen to Rush Limbaugh as your primary source of information, you can read the book I've written, Someone Has to Say It, and walk away thinking, oh, this is something I can relate to. And it's designed more for an audience that's more general, as opposed to, say, the efforts of the people over at the Stormer, you know, where they're reaching disaffected youth who are angry, and justifiably so, at being told that, you know, they are to be blamed for stuff they weren't even born for when, you know, it happened. So we all work in different ways, and the one thing I try to do, and I think that's really important, and I know you do as well, is, you know, we're all working to stop the same sort of people. We're working to start, you know, people with Marxist ideals, and whomever those people are, you know, I tend to say things a little more subtly, but it doesn't really matter. What's important is that we unite our strength, because what the left has done so well is they've weaponized language and they've weaponized individuals against one another through a million different means where we can't gather our strength against a single target. And the book really goes into how they use this again and again, changing who they defend and who they, you know, work against, but always at the interest of, you know, a certain small group of financially powerful people, and with a certain idea, which is to say that government should run your life instead of you. And that sort of universal idea is, I think, one that anyone can relate to. And it's why, you know, my book is a great entry for someone who, you know, you might know, who you're just introducing to the movement, but who isn't ready to go the full distance.
Well, it's very important. We certainly need that. And thank you for coming on my show, and on short notice of that, I look forward to having you come on again frequently.
Absolutely. Thank you, Patrick. If you want to learn more about me, nationalright.us, Someone Has to Say It, The Hidden History of How America Was Lost, is available on Amazon. And if you don't like Jeff Bezos, reach out to me at tom@nationalright.com/.us, and I'll be happy to set you up with a copy, an autographed copy, or anything like that.
Okay. And check out nationalbugle.com, daviddukes.com also for yesterday's talk with Patrick Little, where he talked for a whole hour without mentioning the word Jew, believe it or not, and check it out. Okay, I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. Okay, we might have talked into the break, but thanks a lot for coming on.
Yeah, sure. If you ever need anyone in a pinch, as long as I'm around, I'm happy to do it.
Okay. Well, there's the music. Is my computer wrong? Yeah. Great show. Thank you.